Welcome to Books on Air, the podcast that you don't want to miss. You're about to get a sneak peek at what goes on behind the scenes with authors. You'll find out their secret recipe for creating a book. You'll find out where they get their ideas, and you will get the inside scoop on their newest project. Want to know more? Great. We'll tell you where to find them on social media. Are you ready? Okay, let's meet today's author. Best-selling author Michael Ross is a lover of history and great stories. He attended Rice University as an undergraduate, and he received his graduate degree from Portland State University. He has degrees in computer science, software engineering, and German. Mike's also a member of the Historical Writers Association, and he's written a scholarly article for the Texas Historical Society that's published in the Handbook of Texas Online. He's here today to talk about his new book, Across the Divide, Book One, The Clouds of War. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You are a very interesting guy. When I was doing my research, I always dig around to see what I can find out about authors. You actually were a writer at a very young age, and you published with Random House. You published stories at age 14. Tell me how that happened.
Well, my mom was an English teacher, and she was in charge of the curriculum, textbooks, and so on for Fairfax County at the time in Virginia. And she had a contact with a lot of publishing companies. And she had some copies of my stories, and she sent those to someone at Random House without my even knowing about it. And I got a check back for $25.
Wow.
I have no idea where those stories are or whatever happened to them, but that's the way it was. And they asked her if I had any more, and she said, I don't know. So
I love it. Well, you did start writing young. Your parents were both teachers. Was that a big influence on your life?
I think so. Mom in particular, being an English teacher, she was interesting because she taught writing, but she wasn't a terribly successful writer herself. She could tell you how to do it, but when it came to, you know, coming with the ideas and the inspiration and everything, that didn't work out as well. But she was very good at teaching the mechanics of writing.
I think that's so interesting. I was an English teacher myself, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm a writer. I don't know how good I am. I mean, I've written a few things. I've written some fiction and some nonfiction. So it gives me kind of a different understanding of what the process of writing is like. But trying to teach someone else to write, you can teach them structure. You can teach them, you know, the parts of speech. You can teach them how to write a good sentence. You can teach them what makes a paragraph, how to make a paper, blah, blah, blah. But if that spark is not there, that creative something that's indefinable is not there, then they'll never be a successful writer. And you, my friend, have that spark. I love this book, and I love your prose. Tell me why you were drawn to the Civil War for this book.
Well, I think I've told you to some extent that I knew Will Crump's granddaughter when I was a little kid.
Now, he's your main character.
He is my main character, William Dorsey Crump. He's a historical person. He's a real person, really lived. And when I contacted his currently living family, there are no direct descendants, but there was a great-grandniece. They said, well, we don't know much about him. We'll look forward to your book.
Oh, dear. How interesting.
So I did all the research on Will, and, of course, I had heard some stories from his granddaughter. And I always wanted to write something about Lubbock. And then I started doing the research, and I was just like, you can't even make this stuff up. It's just, you know, the parallels with the book to today are just amazing. The time of the Civil War, when the country was divided, when families were divided, and so many different aspects. They had sanctuary cities for slaves. We have sanctuary cities for immigrants. They had economic problems with tariffs. We've had economic problems with tariffs. The split between the North and the South, maybe not quite as regional today, but still there. I don't know if you know, but the mayor of New York City actually wanted to secede. So there was a lot going on at that time. They had riots. The Pratt Street riots in Baltimore show up in the book, and we have riots in the streets today that are racially motivated. The motivation for the Pratt Street riots was that the Massachusetts group was going through that was the first colored soldiers. It's the same regiment that shows up in the movie Glory. And the people in Maryland were not happy about these colored soldiers, and that provoked a riot that killed six people.
Wow.
So there's just so many different aspects that are the same. And families, I had never run into the Breckinridge family very much, but when I started searching through and doing research, of course, John Breckinridge was the Vice President of the United States and a Confederate general. And then Robert Breckinridge was a pastor and preacher, but he had two sons, one of whom fought for the South and one fought for the North. And so Joe Breckinridge later became a brigadier general in the Union Army. So it's just so much in the way of family divisions. And I was fascinated with the idea of what happened to your average family during the Civil War. So many books are about the commanders and, you know, sort of the big names in the Civil War. If you look at, like, Killer Angels, you know, you're talking about Lee and Stonewall Jackson and Grant. And I wanted to know what happened to the individual family. How did that work out? And so I took Will's family and the things that they went through and tried to make it so that I could see how that conflict worked out in a family.
And you've made this a broad scope. I mean, you've taken not just one side of the issue. You've made this a very broad scope book so that you're looking at not only Will's family, but you're also looking at some of the Black families and what's happening to them. I'm probably a little ahead of myself, but your book is on Amazon, and there is an audio excerpt on Amazon that I just think is so powerful. And it is a piece of one of the Black families is trying to escape. And as your narrator reads the narration, you can just see it in your head. You've done such a wonderful job. So the book really is very broad scope. How did you do research? Was it all online? How did you do this? This is really a detailed book.
It wasn't all online. I went to, of course, I'm familiar with Lubbock, but that comes later in book three. But I went to Lexington, where a good piece of the early part of the book is set, and I wandered around and talked to people. I walked the ground that my characters walked. I went to Shiloh. I walked the ground that my characters walked. I made sure that I understood the terrain and what else was there. Shiloh is one of the best preserved battlefields of the Civil War. And so a lot of what you see there is the way it was then. And it's really amazing. I'm a great believer in going and seeing the actual places, if you can, that the setting occurs. The book has basically Will as the main character, his two sisters, Julia and Albinia, and Luther. Luther is an enslaved individual that belongs to the Clay family, the James Clay family, descendants of Henry Clay, and their plantation at Ashland. And so there's those four main sort of point of view characters. Albinia is one that she's kind of the middle daughter, and she's the pretty one, and she gets awakened to the fact that slavery is really evil, and she starts seeing it. She's been a sheltered young lady, but suddenly, through her friendship with the Clay family, she meets Luther, and she starts seeing a lot of things that are really evil. Her character is predicated on a real person, Delia Webster, who actually lived some time before that and was involved with the Underground Railroad. And so she becomes involved with the Underground Railroad, and she ends up going to prison for it and coming out and continuing her work, which is exactly what Delia Webster did. And her sister, Julia, is predicated on the real-life person, Pauline Cushman, who became a spy for the Union. And that whole story around her spying for the Union, I don't want to spoil it.
No, don't. Yeah, right. Is there a part of the book, Mike, that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure. I have a couple of short pieces here that I could share. The first piece, Will Crump was involved in the Battle of Shiloh, and so this is the night after the first day of the battle, the night of April 6th. Late in the afternoon, the order came to fall back. They bivouacked just south of the Hamburg-Purdy Road. They made what simple camp they could. Darkness fell, and with the ebony of night, sheets of rain fell. Lightning and thunder boomed, as though heaven or hell joined in the battle. In the distance, Will could see the flash as the federal gunboats fired their cannon. Whenever there was a break in the storm, Will heard the cries and pleas of the wounded left on the field. Occasionally, a winking torch marked a group of brave soldiers going out to retrieve wounded. Will huddled in his pup tent, alone in the midst of the tents of the other raiders. No one knew why the order to halt was given. The horrors of the day passed in his mind, including the cold, dead eyes of his friend, Archie. Was it worth all this? Why was he here, really? Where was God in the midst of this hell? Suddenly, it was too much, and he broke down sobbing, wishing for home. What if his father lay dead on some field, perhaps even this one? He thought about the fact that each of the Federals he'd seen today and the companions in gray had parents, siblings, sweethearts, people that loved them. This was nothing like doing drills in front of Morrison, or even the skirmishes they'd seen in the war up to this point. What compelled men to don clothes of different colors like skins, march out on a field, and kill without thinking, based on the color of that woolen skin? Will prayed, asking God to make himself real in this, and if Will survived, he made up his mind to go home as soon as his enlistment was over. He'd fight to defend his home, but only his own home and no other. Will slept poorly, reliving the battle in his dreams.
That is so powerful. Wow.
And then this second segment is towards the end of the book. Albinia heard the news of Will's impending arrival and sank to her knees, thanking God. Then she hurried to the barn where Sarah was feeding chickens and Robert was mending a harness. "Ma, Pa, it's Will. He's coming home." "Praise God," said Sarah. "When?" "Probably a week or so. He's in Virginia." "I don't know how he got there or why. Julia is arranging passage for him. Pa, could we make a room or build a little cabin or something? I want him to know he's welcome here. It won't be like coming home to Lexington, but..." "Sure we can. I'll get Ned and some others. I'll bet they'll help." Albinia hesitated. "Maybe. But Pa, remember, he's a Confederate, or was. Not all of our black friends are likely to be charitable towards him. Some of our white friends suffered under Morgan's raid. You know that better than anyone does. Look what almost happened with you and Will. They know you and me, but the gray uniform represents something that tried to put them in chains. They don't know Will. And after Lincoln's assassination..." Robert shook his head. "You're right, of course. It's more than people just despising them because of the color of their skin. It's what's in a person's heart that counts. But they don't know Will. I'll hire some help from town and not tell them what it's for."
Boy, that does present both sides, doesn't it?
It's, you know, the thing is that's it. It's reaching across the divide and looking at what's in people's hearts and not just going on external appearances or making assumptions.
You're absolutely right. I know that we have absolutely pulled our listeners right through the podcast that they're listening to right here with us. I want them to know where the book is available. I always check Amazon because Amazon is where so many people get their books. And your book is right there on Amazon. And there's this wonderful audio that I mentioned earlier. The title of the book, I always like to give this so they can put this in the search feature. If they go to Amazon.com, there's a big wide search feature. Put in Across the Divide, Book 1, The Clouds of War by Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Ross, R-O-S-S. When you click on that, it will take you right to the page where the book is. Now, there are two things that you can see there. First of all, when you look at the book cover, Amazon often will have a look inside feature up in the upper right-hand corner of the cover, which means if you click on look inside, the book opens. And there's the first chapter and the title page, and you can see it there. But also beneath that, there is an audio sample. If you click on that audio sample, there's a wonderful young man who is reading directly from the book. They can also buy the book in audio. Is that right, Mike?
That's right. And if they aren't Audible members and they sign up for an Audible subscription, they can actually get the book for free.
Oh, terrific. Terrific. Now, where else, if by some chance perhaps someone hears our podcast and they either don't have a computer or they choose not to buy from Amazon, the book is available in a lot of places. Would you give us some examples?
Sure. It's available through Barnes & Noble, either online or in brick-and-mortar stores. It's available through Walmart. It's available at Christian Book Distributors, which is christianbook.com. And several other places. Pretty much you can ask your local Christian bookstore or any other bookstore, and they can get it for you.
Perfect. Now, you're on social media. You have a website. I've been to the website, and it's very nice. Let's tell our listeners, if they go to your website, and let's give them the address, what they'll find there.
Okay, the address is just the letter R, R Us. It's kind of a play on the old Toys R Us type thing. And basically what I've done is I publish fairly often there, and I try to write things that are interesting to people that are interested in history. If you like history, especially history of the United States, you will find a lot of information there, usually on people and things that you didn't find in your history books. So this is kind of the atypical stuff that you didn't find in school. I did a series at one point on all the vice presidents' wives of the United States.
Wow.
I did a series on all the signers of the Declaration of Independence. Name all 56 of them real quick.
Oh, exactly, right? I can name about five or six.
And things of that sort. I did a feature for about 2 years on black history. So there's a lot of things about different individuals in the African-American community. For example, did you know that that the traffic light was invented by John Hunt Morgan's grandson, who was black?
No.
And things of that sort, that the light bulb only exists because of Lewis Latimer, who was an African-American individual. He took Edison's design, which didn't work for very long, and made it reliable and manufacturable. And he also had a role in the telephone. So there are a lot of different unusual things there that you probably wouldn't know about if you didn't go look it up.
You also have your connections on social media posted there on your website. You're on Facebook. You have an author page on Facebook. How could they find you?
It's facebook.com, Historical Novels R Us.
And then you're doing a Twitter feed as well.
Yes, I'm at Michael L. Ross 7 is the Twitter handle.
And you've got a YouTube channel.
I do. YouTube, Historical Novels R Us. And you'll find there some trailers about the book, as well as some material about Nicodemus, which is a African-American community that was founded in Kansas, and that comes into book three. And the descendants of that community are still there. It's now a national park.
Oh, wow. Now, you are on the board of the Historical Novel Society of America, and you've got a Historical Novel Society of North America conference coming up in June. Tell me a little bit about that.
So this is primarily aimed at authors, but readers might, you know, that if you're interested in historical fiction, this is a great place to find out about it. It's going to be in San Antonio. It's going to be June 24th to 26th, and this year, for the first time ever, there's going to be a virtual component that will allow you to attend at least parts of the conference online, whether you can come to San Antonio or not.
Now, we are in August of 2020. I'm assuming this is June of 2021.
That's correct.
Okay, I thought I'd clarify that for our listeners in case they listened to this and thought, wait, is this an old podcast?
Nope, this is next year coming up. We're busily planning away. Our guest of honor is going to be Lisa C., and we have Jane Friedman, who's pretty popular with a lot of authors, and Libby Hawker. So if you're an author and you are want to be an author, and you're trying to learn about the business, this is a great place to come. If you're just interested in historical fiction and you want to see all the new books that are coming out and the things that are going on in that genre, this is a great place to be and to attend.
Well, let's look at your new projects. Across the Divide, book one is The Clouds of War. Now, this is a series, and so there will be a book two, and there will be a book three. And I think you've already got book two almost ready to go.
That's correct. Book two should be coming out sometime this fall, and it's called The Search. So it'll be Across the Great Divide, book two, The Search. And this covers the period from right after the Civil War up to about 1870. And Will, at this period, Will Crump, the real person, kind of vanishes off the map. Nobody really knows what he was doing. So I have supplied some details for him. So he will be going west, and he will run into Red Cloud's War. And he will have a Shoshone companion during this book. And I've gone out to Utah and interviewed Darren Perry, who is running for Congress and is the chief or chairman of the Western Shoshone tribe for this book. And well, then book three will center on the founding of Lubbock and Will's Dallas period.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the further adventures of Will. It's amazing that he is a real person and a real character, and I think you did have to take literary license with him in book two. You and I talked before we started recording about the PTSD that the soldiers who fought in the Civil War must have felt, because it was truly a personal hand-to-hand combat kind of war, and that must have been unbelievably, I mean, just I don't have words to describe what that must have been like for the individuals who participated in that. This has just been so much fun, and you are just so full of knowledge and so full of so much information. When our listeners pick up a copy of the book, The Great Divide, Book One, The Clouds of War, and they read it, and they close the back cover either metaphorically from an electronic standpoint or literally from a hardcover standpoint, what do you want them to take away, Mike, from the book?
I would love it if people would look at it and say, you know what? I personally can do something to reach across the Great Divide. The things that divide us don't need to. If we look at the things that we have in common, if we look at the goals that we're trying to accomplish, and we look for common ways to do those things, we can do so much more. I love the example a couple of years ago. There was a African-American gentleman who embraced someone in the Ku Klux Klan. And so this story was carried on NPR. And he ended up with 200 Klansmen that hung up their robes and became friends of the African-American community. That's the kind of personal action that individuals can take. It's easy to look at things and say, you know, I'm just one person, and what can I do about the riots, and what can I do about all the divisions that there are in the country? The answer is you can do a lot if you will just reach out across the Great Divide.
Mike, this has just been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being our guest today on the Books on Air podcast.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to the Books on Air podcast, brought to you on webtalkradio.net. You can also hear our podcast on iTunes and iHeartRadio. Remember, you can find Across the Great Divide, Book One, The Clouds of War by Michael Ross on Amazon. I'm Suzanne Harris, and I hope you'll join me for our next Books on Air podcast. Remember, you never know who's going to be here. Thank you so much for listening.